Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Narayanam namaskrityam. Naram Shiva Narottamam Divim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udirayet Nashta Praishwa Bhadreshu Bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtikaki Bhavati Naishtiki Krishnaya Vasudevaya Krishnaya Vasudevaya Devaki Nandanaya Cha Nanda Gopa Kumaraya Gopa Kumaraya Govindaya Namo Namaha Govindaya Namo Namaha. So today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 5, Text 11. Tatvargo. Nee, ek minute, ek minute. Tadvagvishargo janata gaviplavo. Agvishargo janata gaviplavo. Yasmin pratishlokamabhadavadyapi. In patishlokam avadyavadyapi namanyanantasya yashon kitaniyat shinvanti gayanti grinanti sadava tadvag vishargo janata gaviplavo Yashmin pratishloka abhadyavadyapi Pratishloka abhadyavadyami Namanyanantasya yashon kitaniyat Antasya yashon kitaniyat Shrinvanti gayanti grinanti sadhava Tadvag vishargo janata gaviplavo Yasmin pratishlokam abhadyavadyapi Namanyanantasya yashon kitaniyat Shrinvanti gayanti grinanti sadhava Min pratishlokam abhadyavadyapi Namanyanantasya yashon kitaniyat Shrinvanti gayanti grinanti sadhava Tadvag vishargo janata gaviplavo Patishloka Badya Vadyapi Namanyanantasya Yashon Gehaniyat Shinvanti Gayanti Nanti Sadhava Tatavi Sargo Min patishlokam abhadyavadyapi Namanyanantasya yashon kitaniyat Shinvanti gayanti tisadava Tadvag visargo janata gaviplavo Yasmin pratishlokam avadya vadyapi Namanyanantasya yashon gitaniyat Chinvanti gayanti granti sadhava Tad That Vak Vocabulary Visargaha Creation Janata The people in general Agha Since Viplava Revolutionary Yasmin In which Pratishlokam Each and every stanza Abadhyavati Irregularly composed Api In spite of Namani Transcendental names Anantasya Of the unlimited Lord Yasha Glorious Ankitana Depicted Yad What Shrinanti To hear Gayanti To sing Grinanti To accept Sadhava The purified men who are honest Translation by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada On the other hand, that literature which is full of descriptions of the transcendental glories of the name, fame, form and pastimes, etc. of the unlimited Supreme Lord is different, a different creation, full of transcendental words directed towards bringing about a revolution in the impious lives of this world's misdirected civilization. Such transcendental literatures, even though imperfectly composed, are heard, sung, and accepted by purified men who are thoroughly honest. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. It is a qualification of the great thinkers to pick up the best even from the worst. It is said that the intelligent man should pick up nectar from a stock of poison, should accept gold even from a filthy place, should accept a good and qualified wife even from an obscure family, and should accept a good lesson even from a man from a teacher who comes from the untouchables. These are some of the ethical instructions for everyone and every place without exception. But a saint is far above the level of an ordinary man. He is always absorbed in glorifying the Supreme Lord because by broadcasting the holy name and the fame of the Supreme Lord, the polluted atmosphere of the world will change. And as a result of propagating the transcendental literatures like Srimad Bhagavatam, people will become sane in their transactions. While preparing this commentation on this particular stanza of Srimad Bhagavatam, we have a crisis before us. Our neighboring friends, China, has made the border of India, has attacked the border of India with a militaristic spirit. We have particularly no business in political field, yet we see that previously there were both China and India, and they both lived peacefully for centuries without ill feelings. The reason is that they lived in those days in an atmosphere of God consciousness, and every country over the face of the world was God-fearing, pure-hearted, and simple, and there was no question of political diplomacy. There is no cause of quarrel between the two countries, China and India, over land, which is not very suitable for habitation, and certainly there is no cause for fighting on this issue. But due to the age of Kali or quarrel, which we have discussed, there is always a chance for quarrel on even slight provocation. This is due to the issue in question, is not due to the issue in question, but the polluted atmosphere of this age. Systematically, there is propaganda of a section of people to stop glorifying the name and fame of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, there's a great need for disseminating the message of Srimad Bhagavatam all over the world. It is the duty of every responsible Indian to broadcast the transcendental message of Srimad Bhagavatam throughout the world due to all the supermost world to do all the supermost good, as well as to bring about the desired peace in the world. Because India has failed in their duty by neglecting this responsible work, there is so much quarrel and trouble all over the world. We are confident that if the transcendental message of Srimad Bhagavatam is received only by the leading men of the world, certainly there will be a change of heart. And naturally the people in general will follow them. The mass of people in general are tools in the hand of the modern politicians and leaders of the people. If there is a change of heart of the leaders only, certainly there will be a radical change in the atmosphere of the world. We know that our honest attempt to present this great literature conveying transcendental messages for reviving the God consciousness of the people in general and re-spiritualization of the world's atmosphere is fraught with many difficulties. Our presenting this matter is inadequate language, especially a foreign language, will certainly fail, and there will be so many literary discrepancies despite our honest attempt to present it in the proper way. But we are sure that with all our faults in this connection, the seriousness of the subject matter will be taken into consideration, and the leaders of the society will still accept this due to its being an honest attempt to glorify the Almighty God. When there is a fire in the house, the inmates of the house go out to get help from the neighbors, who may be foreigners, and yet, without knowledge of the language, the victims of the fire express themselves, and the neighbors understand the need, even though not expressed in the same language. The same spirit of cooperation is needed to broadcast this transcendental message of Srimad Bhagavatam throughout the polluted atmosphere of the world. After all, it is a technical science of spiritual values, and thus we are concerned with the techniques and not with the language. If the techniques of this great literature are understood by the people of the world, there will be success. When there are too many materialistic activities by the people in general all over the world, there is no wonder that a person or a nation attacks another person or nation on slight provocation. That is the rule of this age of Kali or quarrel. The atmosphere is already polluted with corruption of all descriptions, and everyone knows it well. There are so many unwanted literatures full of materialistic ideas of sense gratification. In many countries, there are bodies appointed by the state to detect and censor obscene literature. This means that neither the government nor the responsible leaders of the public want such literatures, yet it is in the marketplace because the people want it for sense gratification. The people in general want to read. That is the natural instinct. But because their minds are polluted, they want such literatures. Under the circumstances, transcendental literature like Srimad Bhagavatam will not only diminish the activities of the corrupt minds of the people in general, but also will fully supply for the hankering after reading some interesting literature. In the beginning, they may not like it because one suffering from jaundice is reluctant to take sugar candy, but we should know that sugar candy is the only remedy for jaundice. Similarly, let there be systematic propaganda for popularizing reading of the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, which will act like sugar candy for the jaundice-like condition of sense gratification. When men take a taste for this literature, the other literatures which are catering poison to society will then automatically cease. We are sure, therefore, that everyone in human society will welcome Srimad Bhagavatam, even though it is now presented with so many faults. For it is recommended by Sri Narada who has very kindly appeared in this chapter. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Yatsa Padantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavamsha Sri Rupam Sagajatam Sahagana Raghunatantam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Paran Sahagana Lalita Sri Visakanvitamsha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pashtaya Bhutale Simati Bhakti Viranta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pasya Chadi Shatarine. So here in this translation, I just wanted to say, actually, I was asked to speak, but actually, I really don't have the ability to speak, and particularly not the qualification, because I don't have any realizations on the Srimad Bhagavatam. But I very much appreciate Srila Prabhupada's realization on the Srimad Bhagavatam. And I've seen his attachment and his love for the Srimad Bhagavatam. And since it is today Srila Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja, I wanted to glorify Srila Prabhupada by speaking my appreciations on Srila Prabhupada's realization. So please give me your blessings. So here a few verses before. See, Narada Muni, the spiritual master of Veda Vyas, is talking to him about his dissatisfaction after he had written so many literatures. He was still dissatisfied, and he's asking his guru what the reason is. So Narada Muni very straightforward explains that you have not glorified the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore you're dissatisfied. So, and in this text he is saying that there are scriptures that describe the supreme, the glories of the name, form and qualities of the unlimited Lord, and they're a type of a different kind of a creation which actually brings about a revolution in the people's minds that are misguided. So even there may be externally some discrepancies, still it should be accepted and will be accepted by people who are thoroughly honest, purified people who are thoroughly honest. So then Prabhupada quotes from Chanyaka Pandit, the moral instructions, that one should accept nectar even from a pot of poison, and gold even from a filthy place, and a good and qualified wife even from an obscure family, and a lesson, a good lesson from a man or her, even if he's from a lower caste. So so these are some ethical instructions. But then he says that saintly persons, they are so much absorbed in glorifying the Supreme Lord that they're broadcasting his holy name. So they are on a different level. They are very absorbed in the Supreme Lord's glories, and they are capable of changing the polluted atmosphere of this age of Kali. And as a result, he says that people will become sane in their interactions. So this is the main theme of what I wanted to discuss. But there's still some part in the purport left that I also don't want to neglect. So then Srila Prabhupada is explaining, so I come back to that. So Srila Prabhupada, he is explaining that in the age of Kali, the age of Kali is already so polluted that even at a slight provocation, we can see people quarrel. And I think here in Bombay, you can see it very much in the trains, see that happening. So so he said there was not even any reason for China or India to quarrel, but just because the atmosphere in itself is so polluted, therefore this came about. And also because the Indian population they are called upon by Krishna to disseminate this knowledge, and they have neglected to do so, or they have hoarded it for themselves. So and therefore this whole situation, this quarrelsome situation in the world has come about. So he says that if the transcendental message of the Srimad Bhagavatam is accepted just by the leaders themselves, then there will be certainly a change of heart. So, and then he addresses the... Someone knows the verse, of course, about the... Prabhupada quotes it a lot. How is it? How does it... The people of India, they have to... propagate this message. How does it start? Bharat Bhumite Haila. Manushya Janma Jan. Sata Kari Kara Upakar. Sata Kari Kara. Kara para upakar. Kara para upakar. Yes. So, you know, he says, so if we attempt that, then the whole atmosphere becomes purified. And even though in the process of doing that, there may be some external discrepancies, we don't know the language, or we have no poetic or literary abilities, still it will be accepted by the people, or it should be accepted by the people who are perfectly honest. If they're purified, then they will certainly accept this. So I remember sometimes like actually sometimes, you know, here it is also this psychology of that we suggest in something that we want the people to be. So sometimes, you know, that is what Narada Muni and Prabhupada are doing here. They're saying there, you know, that people who are qualified, people will all think when they hear this, yes, I'm qualified, I will definitely accept it, you know, even though they may not want to accept it. So sometimes on Sankirtan, we used to do the same thing. We would talk to the people, and then we would give them the book, and we would have them open up the page and read this, and then we would, you know, say something, then we would discuss something about their life, something personal, and then he would say, sir, I think this is meant for you, because you are honest, you seem to be honest. And then, of course I'm honest, you know, so then they would accept the book. So, that's a good psychology. Anyway, so then he says that, you know, just like in a house when there's fire, if there's neighbors that cannot speak the language or somehow or other, if it's such an emergency, everyone will understand what is needed to be done. So in the same way, this spirit of cooperation is needed. And I would like to add here, the urgency is already there in the saint that is disseminating that knowledge. He has that urgency. So he can somehow or other stir up some sincerity in people to also become serious in cooperating with this here. And this is what I wanted to also talk about. You know, Srila Prabhupada's urgency to distribute this message was so great that when he met his spiritual master, who asked him right away, but in the first meeting, please distribute this knowledge in the Western countries. And when he, because he was a follower of Gandhi, when he said, well, who will listen to us? You know, we are a dependent country. First of all, we have to get independence. Then people may want to listen to us. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta pointed out, the urgency is so great, we cannot wait for that to change, for the political situation to change. We have to distribute this message now. And people, Prabhupada became so inspired by this that he could see this is a real saintly person. He had seen so many people who were they were calling themselves saintly persons, but they were just trying to purify themselves, but they didn't have that urgency to want to give this knowledge and culture to others to become purified. So then he decided that he wanted to be his disciple. And later on in life, when the situation was right, he was coming to the Western countries and distributing this. And then he was urging us to print books and to distribute this message also. So we were just coming out of the clouds, so to speak. You know, we were hippies, we were this and that. And we were so much in the mode of ignorance. You know, it didn't get to us, this message, properly right away. But then Prabhupada was adamant about it. So I watched that, how he was adamant, you know. And then I was thinking, Prabhupada, not that only Prabhupada was feeling the urgency to do this now because he was old, but that actually that urgency is within a truly purified devotee. He has that urgency within him, you know, that people are going to hell and we have to save them. And they're constantly pondering how this can be done. And they're seeing how there's so much polluted propaganda, you know, unwanted literatures, and even though the leaders, the materialistic leaders, they're trying to curb that, they don't have the potency to do so. So therefore it is left up to the saintly persons to distribute this knowledge to the people. And he says also there's actually a hankering in everyone to want to hear something interesting. So when the Srimad Bhagavatam came out, we certainly in the West were thinking this was most interesting to hear about other planets and about different lifetimes even. This was not accepted at that time in the Western countries, so it was not heard of. You know, reincarnation, transmigration, you know, these things in different planets where there's life on different planets, whole civilizations, very advanced civilizations, and that there were civilizations here even on Earth in the past that were very advanced, and there's different yugas or ages that we go through, like the seasons in a year. So So it was certainly very interesting for us to read. You have heard these literatures, so you may be taking it for granted. But then I may remind you that it's not for granted. This is something very special. And especially materialistic scientists, they don't accept all these things. But Prabhupada, when he was in the West, he would, you know, like that instance with the astronauts for the first time going, quote unquote, to the moon. Prabhupada made some very startling statements, startling to us even as devotees, because we were new devotees, and startling to the public for sure, that take it for granted, take it down in your notebook, they have not gone to the moon. You know, because he understood the moon planet, first of all, it's not near to the earthly planet. He pointed out Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Sunday, the sun is close, and then Monday, the moon comes after that. So this is so far away, they couldn't have possibly made it with some little, what do you call those things, space capsules, you know. So he was very sure about that. And also, because there were such advanced civilizations that you have to have a qualifications to go there. It is not possible to go there unless we have some qualifications. So on grounds of knowing the literatures, the spiritual literatures, he said that. And that was certainly something remarkable. And now so many years later, we see they didn't go to the moon. They didn't go to the moon. And their speculations, you know, they brought some rocks from the California desert and all these things. So, but what I'm saying, so certainly this literatures are very interesting and worth studying because they have so much depth, spiritual depth and also material information, how this universe runs, how this universe is being administrated. So then Prabhupada says, similarly, let there be systematic propaganda for popularizing reading of the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. So I think Prabhupada would be very happy if he would see how here in Bombay and all around the world our ISKCON devotees are really trying to do that. I remember in 1996, Prabhupada's centennial, Bhakti Rasamrita Maharaj was putting on this all India intercollegiate debate on Srimad competition on Srimad Bhagavad Gita. So I thought that was such a nice offering to Srila Prabhupada at that time. And now here in Radha Gopinath Mandir, I know in Bhaktivedanta Hospital, Radha Gopinath gives every Monday and every Thursday Bhagavad Gita classes, means Bhagavad Gita courses. And I know there's many other, then of course the Bhakti Shastri course for our own devotees to study the Bhagavad Gita in detail is offered, and that goes throughout the year. And then I'm sure in many, many other places to the brahmacharis are going to preach. So, and then Prabhupada says that it is to disseminate this knowledge is recommended by Narada Muni, and he appears actually here in the pages. So to get the order from the higher authority is very important, and because along with the order come out also the blessings to be able to do that service. So then I wanted to speak about this Srila Prabhupada's remark about how the result of propagating this transcendental knowledge is and that he had certainly experienced and seen in the West. that the result would be that people would become sane in their transactions. You know, when he came to the West, that was the time of the hippies, where the hippies were counter-protesting their materialistic culture and trying to look for new values. And in the matter of it, they didn't really know what positive, what solution there were, so they were often doing something really degraded, which they're called to be transcendent, which they said was some spiritual experience, and that is they would take LSD and they were thinking that was some kind of transcendental experience or trip, you know. But then Prabhupada came, so he saw them, how they were acting so degraded. But then as he was giving this knowledge to the devotees there, to the people there, they were becoming gradually sane. Because taking this LSD, people certainly become insane. So, as far as the honest attempt to... So they're, you know, this is a typical thing of people that they're thinking, you know, who are in the mode of ignorance, that they're thinking that they themselves are sane and others are insane. So when people in America, Prabhupada was coming there and distributing this knowledge, and they were seeing the devotees wearing saris and dhotis, which they thought was bed sheets, and tilak, they were thinking that was toothpaste on the forehead, and chanting Hare Krishna, something really crazy. They were saying, these people are crazy. So then Prabhupada wrote a little booklet said, who is crazy? So, and then Prabhupada considered also that he would wanted to reach out to the educated class to appeal to them simultaneously. And therefore he asked the devotees to preach in the colleges and, you know, cultivate the professors and the students in accepting this Krishna consciousness. And then after beginning preaching, you know, simple preaching, then they could bring them to him. And so I was in Los Angeles at that time, and I saw how all this was developing. So we had in Berkeley, which is near San Francisco, we had one devotee, Bahulashwa, who would and other devotees also who would go out on college preaching. And in San Diego, we had in earlier days, like in early 70s, we had Atreya Rishi preaching in colleges, and also Gunagrahi and Badri Narayan. And in Los Angeles, we had Rita Nanda Maharaj, and we had Jyota Karma, and we had part-time also Jayadvaita Maharaj and Dravida. They were in the editing department of the book publication, but they would also go direct preaching. In fact, the whole community was trained like that, that whatever the services were, if they were cooking or if they were pujaris or if they were mothers taking care of children, one day in the week at least they should go out and also help propagating this mission. So I was doing book distribution at the time, and that's what we would do throughout the week. But then one day in the week, we would also go on college preaching. I was usually going with Jyota Karma. He is like a very scholarly person, and he wrote a book, Hidden Archaeology. And so he was the main preacher, but we were like the support preachers, you know. So he would give the lecture, and then afterwards some devotees, some men were distributing the prasadam, and we would sit down, several ladies, preachers, they would sit down while the people were eating. We were sitting with them and making friends with them and seeing what they had grasped, or if there was questions, we would discuss that like that. So we did that, and also we had Shubhananda on. He was also a college preacher, and he also went to other places. I think he did also go to some Christian monasteries. Wherever we found an opportunity to preach, we would go. So, and even later on, the prison ministry was established. Even people in prison were writing, and there's actually a letter I just recently came across, that where some Indian person from what is that place, this islands, what are those islands again? Anyway, from some place in south of Florida, there's some islands where a lot of Indians are settled. Anyway, he was put into prison, and he said it was, and he somehow or other came across some literature and of Prabhupada's, and he read it thoroughly, and he was interested in it, and he was writing to Srila Prabhupada, you know, that he'd been unjustly imprisoned, and he wanted, but now he saw this literature, he had the urgency to wanting to take up this Krishna consciousness, and he inquired about it from Prabhupada about that. So that was also done. Then this preaching. So as far as the approaching the educated class of people, there was, so the Bahulashwa went once to a convention in Los Angeles. He was living in Berkeley, and he was preaching in Berkeley, but also he would come sometime to Los Angeles because there was a lot of opportunity for such preaching. So he went to this Western Psychology Association convention. There were several hundred psychologists, and so Bahulashwa was presenting Eastern and Western approaches to psychology. And there were also some professors that psychology professor, Dr. Alan Gerson, who had met the devotees, Bahulashwa, I think. He was from Los Angeles himself. He was a psychologist, and he, after meeting the devotees, he did a study on the devotees, because he had also heard how the public was reacting, all these people are crazy. So he came to the community and asked the devotees individually so many questions. And then at this convention, he was presenting his theme was Hare Krishna's insane dropouts or vanguard of a saner society. So his theme was, are the Hare Krishna's insane dropouts, or are they vanguard of a saner society? Vanguard means like they're pioneers, a group of pioneers that kind of spearheading new developments and ideas. And that can be either in the political field or in the social field, or in our case, of course, in the spiritual field. So, or are they in fact pioneers that are more sane than us, like that? So, he opted himself for that. Yes, he felt like we were more sane than people in America, you know. So anyway, so he presented a very nice lecture. And he later on also met Srila Prabhupada. And then also this incident with Giriraj comes to mind. You know, when he came from India, because he was very sick, Prabhupada said he should go back to America to be cured. So he was with his family there, and the family members, their father, mother, decided to call a psychologist to see what's wrong with him. So he said, so he met the psychologist, and the psychologist said, you know, did you ever think at any stage that your parents didn't love you? And Giriraj Maharaj was saying, which parents? I had so many parents, this life, the last life, so many lives. I had so many parents. So which parents? And the psychologist was a little puzzled, you know. So then he kept on answering whatever question he was asking. He kept answering in terms of our understanding of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this psychology was like taking a little aback, and she went to the father and mother in the next room, and Giriraj overheard her saying, my dear sir, whatever their names are, I forget Giriraj Maharaj's name. So he said, my dear sir, I can't do anything about your son. I tried my best, but I couldn't do anything. So this was the impression of many people, you know, that they've been brainwashed, and they were insane like that. So many parents, they actually violently tried to took their children away from the community or from places where they were out in Sankirtan, and gave them in the hands of some people that were professionally trying to brainwash them to bring them back to quote-unquote normal, you know. But they were so violent, you know, that in Los Angeles we were picketing once in front of the house. Picketing means holding up signs, and protesting, you know, in front of a house where such devotees were captured by the relatives and helped capture it. And they were doing horrible things to her, as we found out later. And we brought it up to the authorities, this, you know, this matter. And then later on she was released, but it was very traumatic for her. So then so some of these professors that were favorable were brought to Srila Prabhupada also. Actually, one of them was Dr. Stilson Judah. He was from San Francisco also. He was from Berkeley. And there was Harvey Cox, and there was Dr. A.L. Basham. They were all from Los Angeles. And they kind of recognized the historical importance of Srila Prabhupada. And they remarked that the depth of spirituality that he had implanted in his disciples was so significant that it could be only matched with that of the teachings of Jesus Christ and Buddha and Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also, like that. So by doing these kind of services to glorify the devotees and the efforts of Srila Prabhupada, they got some security. So then when they met Srila Prabhupada, it was a very nice meeting. So I want to read to you one about the Stilson Judah. He was a very nice gentleman. And there's actually, I want to show later on a DVD on this Los Angeles community and all these activities of book distribution and preaching. And in that also Dr. Stilson Judah is in one of the morning walks. He had come specifically down from Berkeley, which is like a 7-hour drive, San Francisco to Berkeley, to Los Angeles, to meet Srila Prabhupada. So then we asked him about what his impressions were on Prabhupada afterwards. So he was not just in this meeting, but he had met Prabhupada 3 times. So Dr. Stilson Judah, he was an anthropology professor of the and he was specializing in the history of religions, and he was in the faculty of the Graduate Theological Union in Berkeley. That's some university, and he was also director of the library there. And I remember that he was he had actually been in India because he studied Sanskrit. He wanted to study, and I think he wrote his thesis on Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the teachings and the movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he had already little knowledge, and he said once actually that he met the devotees in the streets, and he saw them wearing dhotis and kurtas and chanting Hare Krishna and giving out Bhagavad Gitas and speaking so authentically on such spiritual texts, you know, which were, as I told you, they were not known during those days. Maybe Bhagavad Gita was known a little bit, but then only the impersonal version. So he was surprised to see them speaking so authoritatively. And then later on, when he met Prabhupada, he understood where that came from, where our strength came from. You know, Prabhupada was backing us up. He was telling us and showing to us how to preach, what to preach, like that. So here he said, I met His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada for the first time in 1969 in Berkeley. I already attended regularly kirtans at the Berkeley Temple for quite some time. Then I decided to write a book on the Hare Krishna movement. When Prabhupada came, I was quite anxious to meet him. There were various theological and philosophical questions I had. We discussed the teachings and movement of Sri Chaitanya, as well as Sankaracharya's non-devotional Advaita philosophy. I was very impressed by Prabhupada's comprehensive philosophical knowledge, and particularly his knowledge of Sanskrit. I had myself studied Sanskrit for 6 years in college, therefore I was awed how half of his conversations, even in his conversations, Srila Prabhupada would quote Sanskrit texts and then immediately also translate them into English. And he said his knowledge of Gaudiya Vaishnavism was exhaustive. He said I also was very struck. I saw he lived the same life he expected his disciples to live. Prabhupada really lived a strict life, and his popularity amongst his disciples was owing to the fact that he acted exemplary. He was truly exemplary, and he was honored by his disciples, but yet he did not put himself on a higher plane. He was also very humble. So, and he said, about himself also that he certainly felt very that he was worth his awe, his reverence. He was worth revering and respecting Srila Prabhupada. Yet Prabhupada, you know, because he was such a scholar and he was such a humble person and a true saint. Obviously, he was a saint. He could understand. Therefore, he was very surprised how Prabhupada treated him in such a gentlemanly way, and also how he gave him such brotherly affection and respect. So he was very impressed by Prabhupada. And then he said, as far as Prabhupada's achievement from a historical point of view are concerned, he said, in reality, he was the first to bring devotional theistic Hinduism or Vaishnavism to the Western world. Until that time, the West had mainly been acquainted with Hindu philosophy through Emerson and Thoreau, who limited their readings only to non-dualistic, means impersonal, how Prabhupada always says, impersonal philosophy, and pantheistic interpretations. So pantheistic means that you know that God is seen in nature as the you know the powers and laws of nature, and he is also accepted as God amongst so many gods, like that. Pantheism, you know, to accept and worship so many gods. So, you know, in primitive culture, they worship trees and whatever. In different cultures, God is worshipped in different ways. And pantheists accept these forms of worship all to be authentic. But the Vedic literatures, of course, they teach differently. They say besides whatever you see, the powers in nature, etc., God is also a separate entity. Apart from that, he is a separate entity, a supreme person with all kinds of spiritual attributes and qualities, and therefore he is the only one worth of our worship. And he is God amongst gods. That's why we are saying, Prabhupada coined this phrase, Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the head of all the gods. And therefore he is the only one that is worshipable. So then Dr. Judah goes on to say that in 1893, Swami Vivekananda further solidified such limited impersonal non-devotional views. But when you go to India, you will find an extraordinary number of temples. They are constructed for the worship of a personal God, and that is the religion and the mass of people actually practice. So he said, I came recently across an interesting reference to an article published in a popular religious journal in India in the 1890s, late 19th century. That means after Vivekananda had come. And in that it says, the author says, that it was a shame that Vivekananda has brought this Advaita philosophy to America instead of the actual religion that India itself believes and practices. The writer of this article goes on to suggest that Vivekananda should be teaching the Americans the religion of Sri Chaitanya's devotional service to the Supreme Lord, and that would be the real contribution to the American people. So this is interesting because Prabhupada's appearance was in 1896, you know, so in this article was written exactly at that time, you know. So, and time passed by until the time was right that Prabhupada came and did this very thing that was desired by this author and wanted, that what he wanted. So then he said another interesting thing was that when he came to Vrindavan, I met one of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers, and he told me that he had been in America in the 1930s. You know, this godbrother had been in the 1930s in America, and he told Dr. Judah that he had given lectures in the universities, etc. So Dr. Judah was thinking, but he never got down to the grassroots, to the people themselves. Grassroots means, you know, yeah, the people themselves, so the common people, you know. He gave some lecture and then he was gone. And he didn't have the power to start a movement, actually. So then later, when Prabhupada came to America, he went directly amongst the people, he said, especially the people who needed him the most, the counterculture protesters on the Lower East Side of New York and the Haight-Ashbury and the people in the Haight-Ashbury district of San Francisco, which were the hippies. That's where the hippie movement started. So they were protesting, but they didn't know where to go. They didn't have the positive alternative. They didn't have the alternative. So right then, in that moment, Srila Prabhupada appeared and by the fantastic magical intervention of Lord Krishna himself, I was thinking the other day when you were reading the 10th canto how you were reading about Krishna bringing the cowherd boys to nearby where the yagic brahmanis were so that they could get the opportunity to give some service to the Lord. So there he also showed this way how he was orchestrating some situation in order to bring a certain result. And that was that he brought the cowherd boys that morning to the river Yamuna into some far forests where he usually was not going, and where also the Brijavasis did not know where he had gone, and they could not bring his lunch tiffin. They could not bring the lunch tiffin to Krishna and the cowherd boys because of it, and so the cowherd boys were really hungry. And so then they were turning to Krishna to please do something. We are hungry. In reality, even though they were hungry, they were just thinking about how Krishna was hungry. And they wanted to please him, you know, wanted to bring something for him. So Krishna said, okay, there's nearby the brahmanis of these brahmanas that were performing a sacrifice. So go there and bring. So in this case also, Krishna orchestrated the situation in such a way. And in Prabhupada's case also, there's later on an interview by, in this film also, is an interview by that Yadubara did with one mother. Her name is Rose Forcash. She was the mother of one of our initiated devotees. And she was saying how she, you know, her daughter was a hippie also, and it seemed that she was upset about that at that time. And when she came to Srila Prabhupada and heard him preaching, and she saw the response, how her daughter had given up drugs and became a devotee, she was asking Prabhupada, why didn't you come earlier? And then Srila Prabhupada, and also for herself she spoke, why didn't you come earlier? And Srila Prabhupada said, because you were not ready. So, you know, sometimes devotees may be also wondering, you know, why did Prabhupada only go in old age, you know? But actually, the situation wasn't right yet, historically speaking also. You know, in the when he was still young, there was, the hippie movement hadn't started. It was like the right situation had to come, that these people were so frustrated that they automatically would want to take up Krishna consciousness. They were frustrated, the young people were frustrated because they understood that the government is sending us out in war into the Vietnam War, and that is the political kind of move on their parts of seeing the dissatisfaction of the young people. They were protesting, and it is a known fact that in politics sometimes people do that. Then to divert the attention, they're engaged in warfare. And like that, so but they were protesting against all that, and so much so that they didn't even want to study, because in studying that meant they would have to take up loans for their studies, and they would have to pay back interest to the government that they didn't believe in. So they were so radical that they dropped out of school, and they said this is feeding back into the system. The system, meaning the government, they didn't believe in the government, so why should we feed back into it by giving them this interest, you know, of our hard-earned money? So this dissatisfaction came about, and then Srila Prabhupada was coming right at that moment. So it was the right time. So this is what Prabhupada is remarking. That is what Dr. Stilson Judah is remarking. He did the right thing. He personally went there and saw what the situation was. And he went and sat on a tree and chanted Hare Krishna in Tompkins Square Park and directly contacted the grassroots people, because they're the ones usually they bring about protest march and, you know, stir up the dissatisfaction. They saw the people being at the height of materialistic advancement, but yet people were not satisfied. They saw their parents earning so much money, but still they were not satisfied, and everything, you know, they protested against. So that is what Dr. Judah felt was had so much effect. It had so much effect that he considered him to be the only one that really had started this Vaishnavism in the Western countries, not Vivekananda. In other places, actually, Prabhupada said also how Vivekananda was, you know, starting to wear coat and pants like that, and always kept the turban though. But how he changed his dress from traditional Indian dress, dhoti kurta, you know, and how not only that, he fell into meat eating also, like that. So we know, just like it says in the scriptures, that purity is a force. Purity is a force in preaching. So he recognized Prabhupada to be the person that was pure and effective in his attempt to spread this movement. So then one of the devotees was saying to Dr. Susan Judah, but at the same time, Srila Prabhupada was sometimes criticized by some ultra-conservative caste-conscious brahmanas in India for transplanting the traditional Vedic culture in the West, because they felt the people there were unfit for the brahminical life. And Dr. Judah said, yes, this is another important historical achievement of Srila Prabhupada. He introduced Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's highly liberal view of Varnashram, which was until then only known as the caste system in the West. So in Sri Chaitanya's teachings, anyone, regardless of the status by birth, one is capable of reaching the highest spiritual platform, and can also practice his faith amongst other fellow Vaishnavas. It's getting late. Okay. So, in glorifying Prabhupada, I just finished this off now. This particular part. There's so many things that this Dr. Stilson Judah actually recognized, and in his book, Hare Krishna movement and the counterculture, he presents all different views like that and points like that. And Prabhupada was so pleased with him. So, you know, in terms of this Varnashram Dharma, I have witnessed one incident where Prabhupada was preaching about this Varnashram Dharma. It was in Sweden, in Uppsala University, when he first time came to Sweden. He was speaking in the auditorium of that university, and I was not sitting on stage. All the devotees were sitting on stage near him, and there was a Vyasasan put there for Prabhupada to sit on, and I was sitting in the audience because my daughter was only 2 years old, and I was sitting near the door so that I could leave immediately if she would create a disturbance. And he presented the Varnashram culture, but because he had been the first time there and he knew this was not preached by anyone before, they may not be familiar with this terminologies like Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas and Shudras. So he called them the first class men, the second class men, the third class men, and the fourth class men. So in the audience, one student stood up and he protested, and he was saying, so where do you categorize into? Which class do you categorize into? He was really agitated because he saw Prabhupada sitting on an elevated seat, and you know, he saw him speaking about the first, second, and third class. And he probably was thinking maybe he knew something about the quote-unquote caste systems that was previously propagated by this caste-conscious brahmanas, you know, that it was like only by birth that you can come to that status. So he said that, and then Prabhupada said, I'm a fifth class man. So you talked about four classes, And he said, I'm a fifth class man, and I'm a servant of all the other classes. And he said that spontaneously. So the devotees immediately were cheering Srila Prabhupada that no noise in the audience could anymore be heard, you know. And then one of the devotees in the front, one of my god brothers, told us later on that actually in Prabhupada's eyes there were tears. And I know these tears were not tears of self-pity, but that these were tears of understanding that the degradation of the brahminical culture had led to such a situation that the people had become so hateful of India and the philosophy of India that they didn't want to know about it. You know, so he felt very sorry about that, you know, and also that his own god brothers were not making the attempt or trying to help, you know, that even people who were qualified to be able to disseminate this knowledge weren't doing that. So anyway, so now we so we just should appreciate from all this what you have here in the Vedic culture, and don't forget that how much it took Srila Prabhupada to distribute it in the West. So here's a little film on that. Yadubara is made. I wanted to speak a little more about that. There was, because he gave a wonderful arrival address where he arrived in Los Angeles. He gave a wonderful arrival address, but actually, you know, because the material that he used, the film itself, took such a long time to bring all these things into, he had to cut it out, you know, he only gave the first line of what Prabhupada said in that arrival address. So here it is, Los Angeles. Do you have that pointer?
The first time I saw Srila Prabhupada was in the L.A. airport. I think it must have been about 200 devotees went to greet him. We were a huge crowd and a loud kirtan, and everyone was pushing forward. And there was a space above the partition where the passengers were coming out, and you were able to see. It was a tall person. I remember a Stetson hat came by and something else came by, and then we could understand, is that? No, that's not Prabhupada. And we kept pushing forward.
So I just will tell you, I won't interrupt, I will just tell you who is who, because you have heard about many of the devotees, like book distributors like Tripurari Maharaj, who Srila Prabhupada remarked is the incarnation of book distribution, because he distributed so many books, he was empowered. He is Brahmananda Maharaj at that time. So here we see Brahmananda Maharaj, and behind him is Bhavananda Maharaj at that time. Go on. And he is Naranarayan. He was in art department and also in helping with the diorama, creating the diorama exhibits.
More and more, and the kirtan was bigger and bigger. And then I felt someone pushing behind me, and I thought, that's odd, because I'm at the back of the crowd. I was a very new devotee. So then I turned to look, and there were two businessmen behind me, sort of mid-20s, you know, suits and briefcases and everything else, but they were looking and looking to see who we were waiting for. Then suddenly we saw a danda raised above the partition, and we knew, oh, Prabhupada must be coming. So then Prabhupada came out, and we all paid our obeisances, and there was the most amazing feeling, like a tidal wave rushing through me from the very depths of my being and pouring out, and I just cried and cried and cried. And then finally when I stood up to go and follow the devotees who were following Srila Prabhupada, I turned and these two businessmen were standing there with tears pouring down their faces. It was such an amazing experience to see how they were touched just by a moment's association with Srila Prabhupada.
Those times in Udvarga when he would come in through the right-hand curtain, he would bow flat, you know, down the Govinda prayers.
This is Sisi Rukmini Dwarkadish.
Floating in the atmosphere.
They were originally called Radha Krishna.
Stand up and look at
but then later on, Prabhupada adjusted it because the community was called Dwarka. So then the deity should be Rukmini Dwarkadish.
The same things that we would always do, but when Srila Prabhupada was there, you understood the depth. I mean, you couldn't understand.
This is Vishnu Jan.
Your appreciation for dandavats would increase unlimitedly by seeing Srila Prabhupada pay dandavats to the deities. When we built the new temple room in New Dwarka,
Kanka.
Remember the first time he came to visit Sankatan there?
Now she's in earth.
That was the first time he ever looked me
There's
in
the eye. There's flowers that we offered, they're called gardenias. They were very fragrant,
so
Prabhupada really liked them. This is Jaitirtha Maharaj. He was Maharaj for some time, but he's not living anymore.
I just couldn't help jumping, and I remember him.
He was for some time also the head of our community. But at this time when Prabhupada was there, it was Karandar. Karandar was the temple president, and Prabhupada liked him very much. He was very confident administrator, cool-headed, level-headed. Prabhupada's lotus feet.
He took Bhaktisiddhanta's picture and put it on Vyasasana where he would never see him. So he spent most of the day.
In the beginning of this movement, I was wondering why the feet of saintly persons and the feet of the Lord are called lotus feet. And then later on, I realized Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet are called like that because he took the trouble to go all around the world to distribute this Krishna consciousness. Therefore, they are lotus feet. This is Bhavananda Maharaj again.
Bhavananda started reading and he started crying and gave it to Garga Muni. Garga Muni started reading and he started crying.
Chai.
So in this way it was handed down to different devotees and eventually by Krishna's grace we got it.
We fought for getting this nectar, this Charinamrita afterwards.
And Prabhupada was dancing with the devotees, just like Lord Chaitanya was his associates. And Prabhupada held up his hands and just started dancing from side to side.
He was very carefully drying Srila Prabhupada's feet. Prabhupada seemed to be pleased with that.
Uncontrollably. Everybody was dancing, enchanting, crying uncontrollably. Prabhupada put us directly into Chaitanya Lila. It was so powerful.
Now he's
direct experience of Chaitanya.
Getting ready to give the address. Actually, whatever he said in his address, there's several points that are very reassuring. Well, it was very reassuring for us that this Krishna prema is natural. Nitya Siddha Krishna Bhakti Sadhya Kabunai. Shravanadi Shuddha Chitti Karaya Udai. So Nitya Siddha, he says, means it is eternally established. Krishna Prema is eternally established. Sadhya Kabunai. It is not artificially acquired. It is natural.
Simply follow.
Because people were always saying, you know,
predecessors in instruction. That's our movement is very easy because we haven't got to manufacture something.
Nowadays, a lot of devotees like.
That's Devamrita Swami.
There's no doubt about that. But his compassion often would manifest in the most determined, focused way. He was the personification of the expression strictly business. He had a mission to do and left no doubts that he had a mission to do. And he expected his followers to be his assistants in his mission, and he would thank them for that, for helping him to please his spiritual master. If you will simply print and distribute my books in every language of the world, all over the world, automatically Krishna consciousness will spread. That was spoken in Los Angeles. I never forgot that. It was like the master stroke for ending all kinds of speculation. Prabhupada just laid it on the line. Mm-hmm. It was not that the ISKCON leaders were fanatical. It's just that Prabhupada laid it all on the line, and this is what he said. What could we do? Except try to fulfill his desire the way he said it would be fulfilled. That was our only value. Back then, devotees knew our only value is to just try to fulfill Prabhupada's desire the way he wants it fulfilled.
We are receiving the transcendental knowledge through Guru Parampara succession. So we have to simply take instruction from Guru, and if we execute that to our heart and soul, that is success. That is practical. I have no personal qualification, but I simply try to satisfy my Guru. That's all. My Guru Maharaj asked me that if you get some money, you print books.
Prabhupada was teaching us the Sri Shupanishad in the mornings. You know, we could barely do anything.
Stop the sound for a minute. No, just for a few minutes.
At least certainly myself.
Because
and the sound.
Prabhupada, what was he saying last thing?
Then we would come up and we would chant the mantras. And only Jayatirtha really was learning them, and a couple of the devotees. And after maybe a week of this, he could tell we weren't taking it seriously. Prabhupada said, I am writing these books for you. You have to know these books. He said, if someone stops and asks you, can you read this, the Sanskrit? And you say, no, I'm not reading, I'm just selling. Prabhupada said, what is that? I'm writing these books for you. And it was just pleading with us, so then we took it very seriously after that to learn the Sanskrit.
Yes. So I took up this from his mouth, that he's very fond of books. And he told me personally that if you get some money, print books. Therefore I'm stressing on this point. Where is book? Where is book? Where is book?
This is where he's also talking about his meeting. This is the place where he was talking about the meeting and revealing the background to why he always asked for books, you know, that he was in Radhakund with his Guru Maharaj, and the Gauriya Math had just acquired a new marble temple in Calcutta, in what is that place again? Bagh Bazar. And marble temple. In this marble temple, his god brothers were fighting with each other about the different rooms they wanted to occupy, etc. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta became really disgusted, and he was just wanting to take the marble out of the temple again and just take the money for printing books. And then he said to Prabhupada, so whenever you have money, so please print books. And because Prabhupada took his spiritual master's instruction serious, this kept being in his mind, how to distribute books. He tried in India, and then finally he came to the West with the first three cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam, and he continued to translate in the West as he was already preaching.
So kindly help me. This is my request. Print as many books in as many languages and distribute throughout the whole world. Then Krishna consciousness movement will automatically increase.
The dance troupe portion of the Vaikuntha Players was in town, and they asked me to do musical accompaniment for a special showing, The Killing of Pralambasura, in the old temple room, only for Srila Prabhupada. There was narration from the Krishna book, and they acted out a dance drama pastime. So only Srila Prabhupada, his servant, and maybe one other devotee were in the temple room at the time. And I sat at Prabhupada's lotus feet with a mridanga, singing different bhajans to accompany the pure dance segment of the dance.
That was Rameshwar, who printed the books and was managing that the 17 volumes that were left of the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita to be published. Prabhupada urged them at this 1975, at this time when he came, urged him to print them in 2 months. And at first Rameshwar was saying impossible, and then Srila Prabhupada was on a morning walk at Venice Beach. He said impossible. So Srila Prabhupada says impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary.
That's accompanying it.
It happened on 3 different occasions. I went in and Prabhupada was reading Krishna book, and he said, if you just read this one book, you can be Krishna conscious. He said, you don't have to read hundreds of books, just this one book. And he had his glasses on, and I was sitting in front of him. Then he just looked at me and he said, you don't even have to read the whole book, just one chapter.
Shruti Kirti didn't like
to
read.
If you just read one chapter of this book, you can be Krishna conscious. And I'm just nodding my head, yes, Prabhupada. But he just kept staring. And then he said, you don't even have to read the whole chapter, just one page. And he just ran his finger down the page. And then he's looking, and he said, you don't even have to read the whole page, just one line. And he ran his finger across the line of the Krishna book. And I said, yes, Prabhupada. And he's still looking. And he said, you don't even have to read a whole line, just one word. And he pointed to a word in the book. He said, just one word of this book, if you read, you can become Krishna conscious. Because Krishna is in
his heaven. Love for the Srimad Bhagavatam comes out here.
And then he put his head back.
His realizations and love for the Srimad Bhagavatam.
And I offered obeisances and I left. But he said that about 3 different books to me over a year. If you just read this one book, you know, once it was Nectar Devotion, once it was Bhagavad Gita, once it was Krishna book. But he said, any one of these, if you just read this one book, you can be Krishna conscious. You can understand. Krishna is in every word. And this is what Prabhupada gave us. Nobody else has given us this. It's direct connection to Krishna through his pure devotee.
Different people are coming to visit Prabhupada. So everybody's bringing Prabhupada something. So the first person comes in, gives Prabhupada a nice gold Omega watch, you know, real gold watch. Prabhupada says, thank you very much, puts it on, takes the watch he had on and gives it to whoever was there.
Brahmin.
Then another person...
This is Vishnujan, Rameshwar, Jai Tirtha.
Then another person comes in and gives Prabhupada a seiko.
Prabhupada plays with the tassel of the pillow. I was allowed to do that service for him. Make a pillow and bed cover and like that, and clean for him, his room sometimes.
Nothing like, oh wow, save this one for me, or put it in my drawer. Nothing like this, you know. I mean, just whatever you're giving is, I'm taking on Krishna's behalf. You would see that in Prabhupada all the time, you know. No mundane attachment.
I was making pillowcase.
Krishna.
There's also one pillowcase I made with tassels on the end, and Prabhupada's leaning against that and playing with the tassel. Prabhupada watched me cleaning, particularly his desk. He would sit behind the desk, and I would take all the things off the desk, wipe the whole desk, and then wipe each article and put it back exactly where it was before. And Prabhupada really liked that. He told me, "It is really nice how you're cleaning and putting things exactly the way it was before."
The first time that Prabhupada came to the new Los Angeles temple, I mean, it was done so nicely with all the marble, all the decorations, flowers being showered down, and playing Jamuna's Govindam. And then Prabhupada went up to his apartment. Bhavananda had done the painting, blue walls, the white ceiling, and the orange curtains. That was the standard. It was so nice with the incense. And I said, "Prabhupada, this is heaven." And Prabhupada looked at me and he grimaced. He said, "Heaven? This is Vaikuntha." There is a big difference between heaven and Vaikuntha.
Not here. But a little later, okay, you see when Prabhupada goes inside and he sits, this is the front room where he received guests. Then there's the middle room where his bed is and where he used to take prasadam. And there's another room, a small room in the back, where he had the cupboard with his personal belongings. And there were also in that room were his books. And it was an open bookshelf. And I got always that service to paint Lord Jagannath before the before Rath Yatra in Prabhupada's quarters. So I was in the quarters, and there was one devotee. He came in to take one of the Srila Prabhupada's. He was books, you know. He was the Sanskrit. He worked in the Sanskrit department, and he used it for reference. And he was one of, his name is Jai Sachinandan. He was, together with Achyutananda, they had written the first songbook in Bengali. So he knew Bengali, and Achyutananda also. So he took out the Chaitanya Charitamrita, I think, for some Sanskrit on Bengali editing. You can go on.
And Bhakti Vinod Thakur stated that he was leaving this planet with his work unfinished.
Mm. Yeah. Let us say.
This is Vishnu Jan asking.
Shall we get unfinished so that we shall get the chance to finish it? That is his mercy. He could have finished immediately. He's Vaishnava, he's all powerful. But he gave us a chance. It is Vaikuntha with mercy.
Jai Srila Prabhupada. Vyasa Srila Prabhupada, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja Maha Mahotsav Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.